And welcome back, everyone, to It's Last Call. Last Call with the alcohol only on lastcallpodcast.com. And just want to recap this weekend's huge Fury versus Usyk card. First off, let's start off with just Alexander Usyk. He is, without a doubt, you can argue, the greatest heavyweight in the last 15 years, probably. I mean, what he has done is just amazing. And you look at this fight going in here, I picked Fury, but because I thought, okay, he is giving up nearly 40 pounds. I mean, Alexander Usyk weighed in at 223 against Tyson Fury's 262 pounds. That including, you know, Usyk is only, you know, a smaller heavyweight in terms of he's about 6'2", 6'3", depending on who you believe. That's 6 inches of giving up against the 6'9" Tyson Fury. Fury also had a 7 to 8 inch reach advantage, depending on once again what you believe with Usyk. So this is a much bigger man who is not this lumbering oaf. You know, Fury knows how to move. He knows how. He has damn good footwork, as we saw against Deontay Wilder, and yet Usyk was in that fight for a long time, just figuring out, okay, what I could do, you know, and having to literally change his game, because when he's in there sometimes with guys his own height or even shorter than him, he fights differently. He uses the jab a lot more. He's content to sometimes going from the, you know, fighting from the outside, using his footwork and, you know, playing more of a longer game. Against Fury, you can't really do that because Fury can just sit outside and pop shots all day long. So he used his legs a lot. I mean, you go back to the early rounds and he is, you know, doing a lot of feints, using his feet to sort of give you an idea of, well, I'm going to throw a jab, but no, I'm going to throw a right hand instead. You know, he's almost, if it's like music where he is changing the beat at a moment's notice so that Fury can't just get used to just sitting from the outside popping shots. And for a while it was working. Fury folks came back, I'd say, in the middle rounds because eventually, you know, Fury decided, okay, I can, and I'm a bigger guy, I can lean on him. He starts doing that. He starts throwing some more body shots. He even hurt Usyk at one point because of that bit nice of a nice right hand, throwing the uppercut. He's mixing everything in there. And then the ninth round happens. And that to me was when everything really just did a whole 180 degree flip where Usyk rocks him. I mean, you watch the highlights and, you know, Usyk, you know, he's been patient. He's doing everything he needs to. You know, he's being aggressive, but he's not, you know, being too overly aggressive. And then, you know, he finally goes in there the ninth, and he does everything that you need to do. He's realizing, okay, the fight's slipping away a bit. You know, starts realizing this now around the eighth round. And the ninth round, he starts getting a little more aggressive. It's almost like he turns the page a bit. And, you know, he's trapping him in the corner. It's a short left hook, overhand left, right to the jaw that really does everything. And he drops Fury. I mean, And all of a sudden, you know, ever after that, you know, and Fury recovered in the 10th. But Usyk does a great job of just going, okay, I got to push the pressure a bit. I got to push the pressure. I got to put the pressure here. I got to be a little more aggressive. And that's just a bit, to me, his best win because in most of these fights, he starts taking over in the middle rounds, and that's when he does most of his damage. We saw that against Dubois. We saw that against even Joshua, where it's the middle rounds or early rounds. He gets into that rhythm and he figures things out. This fight was a lot different. This was a fight where he had to sort of he does pretty well the early rounds. You know, he's fresher. The bigger guy starts taking over a bit, and that's when you really find out about a fighter, is when you get to those championship rounds, rounds 9 through 12. What happens? You know, do you press ahead? Do you freak out? Do you play safety? We've seen guys like, everybody remembers De La Hoya versus Trinidad, where De La Hoya got on his bike and sort of coasted for the last four rounds, and it caught up to him. We've seen Carl Froch versus Jermaine Taylor, where Froch gets rocked. A lot of people think he's going to lose that fight, and then the latter rounds, he pours it on. He gets the 12th round TKO. And look, credit to Fury. Fury recovers well. Yeah, it helped that the bell got saved, and I was not a fan also of the referee. I thought that Mark Nelson allowed a lot of things. In fact, when they do the rematch, I don't know when that's going to be, because we're still waiting on Usyk, you know, how bad is the jaw? Is it broken? Is it just fractured? What's going on? But Nelson let Fury do a lot. And I'm not saying dirty. There wasn't anything like, you know, rabbit punches or, you know, low blows. It was just, you know, Fury would hang on a bit. He'd hold. As they say, he took advantage of a situation. And Fury's known for doing that. Look, he's a big guy, and he did that at times where he would tie up at times with Usyk if he needed a break and just lean on him, stop everything. All of a sudden, Usyk's carrying this big mammoth guy around, because when somebody fights you in a boxing match and they tie you up, they're leaning on you so that you're basically propping them up. They're trying to literally sap your energy by you basically lifting a guy, you know, without off his feet and holding him up. And it's a smart tactic. A lot of fighters have done it. Good referees know how to break it up. Unfortunately, Nelson just really just screwed the pooch here. This, and he gave Fury even time to recover after the knockdown. You know, most referees, versus a lot of referees, would have waved that fight off earlier. Nelson is one of those guys who gives the champion a little more leeway, so Fury was able to recover. And as I said, credit to Fury, he knew, you know, going into the 10th round, that he was not himself. He needed to be, you know, survive that round and then go into the 11th and 12th. But at the end of the day, you have to look at Usyk and just go, you can now say he is an all-time great, because he's done everything you've wanted. I mean, he at cruiserweight, the whole Super Six, he took on everybody who was everybody. Krzysztof Głowacki, Tabisu Muchunu, Michael Hunter, Marco Huk, Marius Bredius, Arek Gassiev, and he beat all of them. Different styles, different attacks. Some of them, you know, were taller, some were shorter. Some guys were brawlers, some guys were boxers. He then goes to Manchester and takes on Tony Bellew, who a lot of people thought he was going to be pretty damn good and that it was going to be, you know, a threat. And he picked him apart and knocked him out in the 8th round, and then he goes to heavyweight. And this is, I think, the one thing that helps Usyk. He had a couple, I would say soft touches, but a couple fights where it got him used to heavyweight, because the first two times he didn't look great. Derek Chisora went, you know, distance, and it was a lot closer than people thought. Chaz Witherspoon went 7 rounds. And look, it takes time when you are moving up from cruiserweight to heavyweight. Ask any heavyweight, and they'll say, look, it's a whole different ballgame when you're taking on guys who are, at one point, you know, you're fighting cruiserweight, and they're all about the 200-pound range, 199 pounds. Maybe they rehydrate and you're up to 215 by the night's end, but so are you. And then you get to heavyweight, and you're taking on guys who are walking around 40 to 50 pounds heavier than you, much physically bigger. You got to get used to that. You got to get used to guys leaning on you because they're bigger guys, so they like to use their size against you. But now with the two wins against Anthony Joshua and with the win over Daniel Dubois, now the win over Tyson Fury, if Alexander Usyk retires tomorrow, he is a first bout Hall of Famer. You can argue he's up there with guys like even Lennox Lewis, Evander Holyfield. I even hate to say it because it's blasphemy, but on par with Muhammad Ali in terms of their career, what they did. He beat everybody who was the top guys. I mean, he cleaned out cruiserweight. Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury considered the two premier heavyweights. You know, they are better than everybody else, and he's beaten both of them. Now, I'll say this here. Once again, we did have some judging, snafu. Craig Metcalf. This is what drives me crazy about boxing, judges. Some of these guys, you look at them, and God, they are horrible. I mean, Craig Metcalf, he might be a nice guy, but he is a horrible judge. I mean, you look in some of these fights, you look and you go, okay, he needs to explain what he sees, because this has been like a couple cards now where you look and you go, man, this ain't good here, buddy. There was the Usyk card where he's the only guy who has 114-113 Fury. Regis Progre against Daniel Zorrilla. Everybody and their mother had that big for Progre, but he should have won this fight easily. And lo and behold, 114-113 for Zorrilla, which I don't even know if his mother had that for Zorrilla. And twice now this has happened. It's just sort of like, okay, this is the problem with judging, is that, when you put in a bad scorecard, you should basically be like, all right, we have to have you have back. This is now the second card he's done this. And thankfully, a lot of his fights that he's had, Marlon Tapias, that fight ended by knockout, But, yeah, even his last fight, it was Vanessa Page Jonas versus Abril Argentine Vidal in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Two of the guys had a fight for Vanessa LePage by big, 97-93. He's the only other guy who sees it for Abril Vidal. And you just sort of look and go, okay, this is now a pattern of his, three out of the last four fights, with the only one being Udai Shigoke versus Pania Pribizo. I mean, this is a guy who should not be judging bigger cards because he keeps turning in bad scorecards. And it's just mind-boggling. But, this should have been a fight where it's an easily unanimous decision. And guys like this, unfortunately, screw it up. And imagine if Usyk lost the fight because of this. It's mind-boggling. I don't know what to tell you. Post-fight, now we get to some things here. I like Fury at times. He's great for the sport in terms of he knows how to present himself. He knows how to talk. He knows how to do a lot of good things here. But, God, he says stupid shit that you really need to sort of look and go, why, buddy, why? And case in point, he basically said, quote, I felt I won the fight, but the other guy, because of the war, they felt sympathy for him, so... What? I mean, first of all, the war he's talking about, the Ukraine versus, Russia war, which is going on, no matter what you think politically about that, and trust me, in certain countries, you can debate that for until the cows come home. Usyk's family is in Ukraine. I think he's more affected by what's going on over there than any judge who's thinking about that. I don't think any of the judges, think about just go, oh, wow, I got to take sympathy for Usyk because, man, he's going through that. No! I just, and it's just, it's all Fury has to do is just go, hey, look, I thought I won the fight. It was close. I'm definitely getting in the rematch. But it's something stupid like that, which he says. You look at Fury and go, God, you're an idiot. You just, because he was gracious at the fight. You know, it wasn't like Anthony Joshua, where Joshua takes the mic and makes it all about himself. I don't know what to say. There is going to be a rematch. There's a contractual rematch. Because this fight did so well, everybody wants to see a rematch. I don't know when that's going to be, because that's after the fight. Usyk got taken to the hospital due to possible broken jaw. Probably had a concussion. There's probably a lot of other stuff going on. They're supposed to have this in October for rematch. That's not happening. I'll tell you right now, that fight will not happen in October. You can put money on it. I don't know what they do next. I mean, if you're Fury, do you take another fight? I mean, there's the big money fight, which is out there, which this fight should have happened years ago, but promoters found a way to sort of screw the pooch on this. Both ones, Hearn and Bob Arum, is Anthony Joshua, Tyson Fury. That fight is big money. That fight should happen in the UK. Do not put it in Saudi Arabia. Do not put that fight in Saudi Arabia. Make that fight in the UK. It is money. That will sell at Wembley. That is a fight where you can put Vuku tickets. That is a fight over there, which is for not just, you know, world bragging rights, but it's the two greatest heavyweights of the last 20 years out of UK fighting against each other. There is bad blood. Neither of those guys sort of like each other. You know, Joshua has had a lot of things to say about Fury. He thinks Fury is a bit of an asshole, which he kind of is. Fury has never been a fan of Eddie Hearn and, to an extent, Anthony Joshua. This fight sells itself. You put this in the UK, you make big money. Do not overthink it. Just make it freaking happen. You're welcome. That's all I need to say. Maybe Fury does something different. I mean, there's, you know, you look around and there, if he wants to go maybe a safer route, and as I said, stressing on safer, well, you know, I'm looking around, you know, you could always do somebody like Jarrell Miller, if you really just want to tune up, if you want something a little more dangerous, maybe Joe Joyce or Martin Bacol, both of them in the UK. It's sort of easier to make both of those fights. Hell, you know what? I'll even go, you know what? Even I'll even say this, a guy in the undercard who had a great fight, you know, would be a nice little boost. Agit Kabayo from Germany, who we'll talk about a little bit later. There are options for Fury. I mean, look, there's also a chance Fury retires. I mean, you never know what Fury. He's just, he marches to the beat of his own drum. He does what he wants to do. He's made money. He's said at times he really does not like boxing. It's taken him to a dark place. You know, he's an older fighter, 35 years old. You know, you could easily see him just call it, screw it, you know, fight the rematch against Usyk, hold out for, you know, stay, you know, basically on the sidelines till that fight happens, and then just say, hey, I'm calling it today. Thank you, everybody. You know, tip your server on the way out. I'm done. You know, Spreck is English, but we'll have to find out later on. I want to quickly touch about the rest of the undercard. It was a Saudi card. It's, you know, there's some good, there's some bad. The pacing was at times just, you know, it is what it is. It's, you know, you look and go, Jai Opintai versus Maurice Bredis. It was a rematch from their fight several years ago. Look, you know, Opintai is hitting his peak. He is 28 years old. This is what, you know, this was his second title defense since beating Bredis all the way back in 2022. Won pretty convincingly, unanimous decision, 116-112 twice, and then 117-111. Where does he go next? You know, there's still some more fun fights for him at cruiserweight. You know, this is a guy who, you know, can get big money fights if he wants against Lawrence Okali, which is, you know, Australia. That's always a big fight. You know, you got Gilberto Ramirez if he wants, you know, if he wants to either go to the United States or bring, you know, Gilberto over to, you know, Australia, which that'd be a big money fight. Yeah, you got Chris Billiam Smith. You have Richard Ryukpor, you know. There are some fun fights for him before he decides to go to heavyweight. And there's even Robin Sirwan Safar, who had a nice win over Sergey Kovalev. We'll talk about that. Bredis? I don't know what he does next. He's 39, and he's been in a lot of these wars. And look, credit to him. He, you know, this was, he had taken almost, you know, a year, almost 2 years off, you know, in between his fights. You know, he tried to get back into shape, you know, heal up from a lot of just the wear and tear. But he's had a lot of these fights where he's taken punishment. And it's, you know, it's the, all the way going back to, you know, he was fighting guys like Mahmoud, you know, Mahmoud Shar, you know, he was fighting a couple heavyweights a couple times early in his career around 2015. And then, you know, he had the whole Super Six where it's Marco Huk, it's Mike Perez, it's Usyk. You know, in between, you know, there's also the old Raju Durodola fight, which, that was a, it was a hard fight. You know, there's Christoph Glowacki, which, you know, he got, that was one of a few fights he actually won, but quickly got them in the third round. The Unil Dorticos fight, that fight was just a very hard fight. So, you know, after all these fights, and when you're 39 years old, it might be time for him to retire. I mean, he's just, this sport takes a lot out of you. It's like, as one of the fighters said to me, it's like being in a car crash. And after a while, you can only be in so many before your body just goes, nope, I'm done. I have enough. As I said, that's, I opened, there are two guys who are going in different paths during the night. We go to, you know, the Robin, you know, Sirwan Safar win against Sergey Kovalev. Yeah, Kovalev's washed at this point. Credit to him for surviving, but, you know, he was down around 10, survived that fight. Yeah. If, I don't know what Lee Every saw in terms of 94-95. He watched a whole different fight. Victor Laughlin and Howard Foster had a little more realistic, you know, 99-90, 97-92. Safar all of a sudden now jumps himself at, he's 16-0 into a, you know, a much bigger bracket. You know, he's ready for a top 10 fight. Kovalev is just, he should retire. He needs the money. That's all he can say. And unfortunately, the Kovalev was great at light heavyweight. But there, once again, in boxing there, the weight classes were there for a reason. He's a smaller, much smaller cruiserweight. He's only 6 feet tall, and he is, you know, 72-inch reach. At light heavyweight, he could bully people around because he was a decent-sized guy. But we've already seen now twice in his two cruiserweight fights. And look, the first one was against Terrell Pulev, who was, you know, he won, but it was, you know, an immense decision. Pulev's not that good. Terrell Pulev is not like his brother. It's just, it's not what you want. So, the Safar fight was, that's the cold slap of reality. And, look, he's, if we thought Bredis is old at 39, Kovalev is 41 years old. He's been through the wars. He's, enough of weight cuts, everything. He'll stick around because he as once again, he needs the money. Like a lot of these fighters, he needs the money because, well, legal issues, you know, outside business ventures, not much else he can do in terms of making the kind of money he's used to. So, yeah, it's for him, he'll probably fight on. It's a mistake, but it was one of the weaker fights of his card. Meanwhile, the biggest winner of a card was Ajit Kabayel. If you don't know, as Dana White says, if you don't know, now you know. Seventh round knockout over Frank Sanchez. And I thought this fight was going to stink because Frank Sanchez is that Cuban guy who gets on his bicycle, likes to jab. He's not really the most engaging fighter. He's in some couple of unanimous decision wins or long fights where it's like, oh my God, this is going to be like pulling teeth. F.A. Jacba, Christian Hammer, even Carlos Negron. He's not this, you know, entertaining fighter who's going to be blood and guts. And you thought, okay, this might be one of those fights where it's evenly matched. This could go 10 rounds. Kabayel took care of business. I mean, he went in there and he did what he needed to do. He went after Sanchez. He didn't, you know, a lot of fighters make the mistake sometimes trying to box with Sanchez. They try to get cute. He didn't. Look, round two, he's going in there and he's bullying Sanchez in the corner. He's, you know, landing some uppercuts. He's going to the body. He's doing everything. And for most of the fight, he made it a fight. He was the one who was attacking, you know, Sanchez. He's the one who's landing, throwing big shots. He's the one trapping his body. He went to the body early. And we saw in round seven, that's when he really turns it up. And it's, once again, it's what we talked about. It's body shots. It's, you know, those short hooks, you know, right to the rib cage. And Sanchez went down. And you could, you know, it's not one of these things where it's a sexy one. It's delayed, but when you're a trainer, you tell guys this is the, you know, this is what pays off. It's the body shots, constant attacking the ribs, constant attacking the ribs. And he just, you know, it took some time, but like Novocaine, it got the job done. And credit to Kabayel because once again, you know, it's a flurry of shots, but it's with the body. And Sanchez was just out. I mean, in terms of he could not get up, he couldn't breathe, he was just done. Kabayel is now a guy you all of a sudden look and go, he's jumped the line. He's an entertaining, action-packed fighter with some pop. He's youngish for a heavyweight. He's only 31 years old. And this is now the second time. Last one was in December against Arlansbek Mahmudov, the Lion, where he was a heavy underdog. A lot of people thought Mahmudov was going to roll through him, and he drops, you know, Mahmudov three times in four rounds and basically knocks him out. This is now the second undefeated kid that he's taken on and beaten in tremendous fashion. So this is a guy who all of a sudden you're looking going, he's ready for maybe a title eliminator. Possibly, you know, a fight with the winner of, you know, Jared Anderson versus Deontay Wilder, Zilal Zhang, or hey, throw him in there against possibly there's Joseph Parker taking on Daniel Dubois, winner of that, maybe against one of those guys. You also have, you know, because of the way the whole boxing thing is, you're going to have Philip Hergovic get a title shot soon because, well, he was in line. He was He's fighting Daniel Dubois this, June 1st. Winner of that is maybe Khabib. I mean, that's a fight you could make. I mean, either way, though, Khabib is the guy you look and go, he's made a name for himself, and he's young enough where it's all of a sudden you go, hey, this is a guy who could be around for the next 5 or 6 years and be possibly a world champion. We'll see what happens. Rest of the card, it was a good little card. I mean, there wasn't anything bad outside of maybe the Cervoan Kovalev fight. You know, you had Mark Chamberlain took care of business. Joshua Wahab, a guy from Africa. A lot of these times, these Ghana, Kenya fighters are just padded records. You think they're going to be great. When they take on fierce competition, it's like, yeah, they get exposed pretty badly. And that was the case. And I think everybody sort of knew that. It was like, all right, this could be a short fight. I didn't think it was going to be a first-round knockout, but, Chamberlain took care of business. The upset, I think, of a night outside of Usyk was Anthony Cassais taking, beating Joe Cordina. Excellent, action-packed fight. Cordina was down early. Shocked a lot of people as Cassais is a guy who isn't known for power. He's only 22-1 with, 8 knockouts. This isn't a guy who's going to, knock people out. In fact, his last several years, the last time he had a knockout was back in 2015. So you thought, okay, if it's going to go distance, instead, credit to Cassais. He did the trick, took care of business. This is another guy you look and you go, hey, all of a sudden he's in line for possibly now a unification fight, whether it's Oshaki Foster, whether it's Oscar Valdez, maybe goes over to Japan, takes on Masanori Rikishi. Either way, credit to the young Irish fighter, he did what he needed to do. He took care of business. Overall, this is a good little card. But the main story, once again, is it's Usyk is put some respect on his name. Whether you like him, whether you hate him, I don't know how you can't hate him. He is, without doubt, the first unified heavyweight champion of a world since the Klitschko's. And you can argue he is now, in that top echelon of greatest of all time heavyweights. Looking forward to the next, but we got to wrap this up. But once again, stay tuned for more great action. We'll be coming back next couple of days, actually. We're going to be having Price Carter on the show. Check him out. We'll be talking Chiefs offseason football draft. Plus, we got more with previewing the upcoming June 1st fight card. And we're going to have some more UFC fighters and boxers along the way. This is, once again, it is Last Call. Last Call with the Alcohol, only on thelastcallpodcast.com.